Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Sitting here in the Houston, Texas area, a little bit of chill in the air, and my guest, Michelle Rowan, is going to be on just a second, calling in from New Hampshire, where it's actually warmer than it is here in Southeast Texas. And today we'll be talking about satisfaction and validation, key components to franchise success. But before we get there, I'd like to thank our guests from the last couple of shows, Evan Hackle and Marianne O'Connell. Great shows, a lot of great information. And, of course, all our shows are archived at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Last week we had a little bit of technical difficulty with our scheduled guest, Dr. John Hayes, who's calling in from Kuwait, and we had to do a replay instead last week. So I apologize for that, but Dr. Hayes has committed to come back on December 10th, and certainly we will have the logistics of calling in through some ridiculously different time zones to make sure that we're here live for you that day. So coming up, next week is Nancy Friedman, the telephone doctor, fabulous lady, fabulous program about customer service, using the phone, and a lot of other things. I don't know if we've ever had a more vibrant person on the air with us. I'm really looking forward to that. If you don't know Nancy, she spoke at the IFA convention last year at one of the breakout sessions. She's fabulous. She's also going to be on Franchise Foundry's current webinar series, our franchise support webinar series. And I think her segment is in early December, so you want to look at that as well, especially introduce your franchisees to that webinar series. And, of course, I want to thank our strategic partners at Franchise Update Group. Without them, we wouldn't have the reach, I believe, that we have. I love our relationship with them, with Gary and Therese and Diane Phibbs and everybody else on the team. So it's Franchise Update Group. And, of course, you know, this time of the year when we are starting to slow down on some conferences, it seems like we have something that we're missing. And, of course, it's an update conference because their next one is not going to be until the spring at the multi-unit conference, which, of course, I always look forward to attending. I want to shout out to all our friends that are at Franchise Times Restaurant Finance and Development Conference at the Bellagio in Las Vegas. Hope you have a great, productive event and safe travels to all. I'm sure that's going to be a fabulous event. And then the franchise community kind of slows down a little bit. There's some individual events. I know Frank Connect has an event coming up in December, and a couple of little small ones here and there. But until we get back from the holiday break in December is when things will really kick up again. So the day before Thanksgiving, we'll be having a replay of Franchise Day, because that's November 26th. And then December 3rd, when we come back, really a great show for franchisors and franchise professionals alike. Tom Epstein and Lee Plave will be my guests. We're going to talk about data and all the data breaches that are going on, not only in the small business community, but right here in our own neighborhood of franchising. Really going to be a great show. I think it's an absolute must. I don't think the franchising industry, as well as basically anybody else, is taking these data breaches as serious as they should. Certainly the CEOs of some of the larger companies that have a data breaches, namely, you know, Target CEO that wound up without a job because of it, because it affects stock prices and everything else. So anyway, definitely want to be on that show. That's December 3rd. And then the following week, we have Dr. John Hayes will be on, and we'll be talking about his new book and everything about franchising. And then we're still working on a guest for December 17th, and then we wind up ending the year right before Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve with replays. And then it's January, and we'll be starting our sixth year on Franchise Today, which is really, really phenomenal in and of itself. So a lot of exciting things going on in the franchise community, and nothing pleases me more than to have a representative from Franchise Business Review on the air today. You know, Michelle Rowan, she's the president of Franchise Business Review, a market research and consulting company that specializes in franchisee and customer satisfaction, as well as franchise relationship issues. After working in the hospitality and telecommunication industry, she joined Franchise Business Review in 2005 as the first full-time employee. Wow, things have certainly changed over the years. Over the last 9 years, Michelle's worked with over 800 franchise systems. She's a very active member of the International Franchise Association. Like myself, she's a certified franchise executive. She's facilitated CEO performance groups and executive networking groups over the last 2 years within the franchise industry, and regularly speaks at industry events, and always has a big smile on her face when networking and as franchising gets together. Michelle, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. And after all the lineup of guests that are coming up, I'm going to try my best to be exciting today.
Well, you know, Yoda says, you know, no if, no try, right? No,
that's right.
I'm sure you're going to be fine. Like I tell all my guests, you know, it's very conversational. You're not being graded or anything like that. So, and I know we have a lot to talk about. So before we jump in, I mean, what's new at Franchise Business Review?
Well, you know, we were just talking, Paul, that the year is coming to a screaming halt, which is kind of scary. So we're actually already prepping for the IFA event that's coming up in February, because it's our 10th year of our Franchisee Satisfaction Awards, which a lot of people know about. And that's kind of just promotion of companies that have great satisfaction as a way to kind of spark competition within the franchise industry, but to share that data with candidates. So we're coming up on our 10th year. This is our 10th year that we've been in business, but that'll be the 10th year of our awards. And just kind of, I think like everyone else, trying to figure out what comes next for our clients. We like to go to a lot of the events and figure out, you know, what are their pain points or what do they see as their opportunities in the coming year, and trying to figure out how we can best leverage that and connect them to each other. So we just continue trying to do that.
You know, and I, you know, obviously falls right in line what we're talking about today, which is satisfaction and validation. Key components to franchise success. And it always amazes me that, you know, organizations don't really keep a thumb on the pulse of satisfaction and validation within their system. And, you know, I wrote an article in Franchising World, it was in the September issue, that was on franchise relations. And, of course, I sit on the Franchise Relations Committee. And the article was creating positive or positively memorable experiences. It's not just for customers. And mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's for franchisees. And, you know, we don't hear often enough, you know, that the entire, you know, franchisee experience is a positively memorable one. And a lot of franchise organizations, you know, certainly don't realize that if it's not positive, or let's take it from a positive standpoint and say it is positive, how much that would relate to proper and effective validation. And I know you have some thoughts on that yourself.
Yeah, well, and I mean, everything is about relationships. I think that that's crucial. And the list of reasons why people don't do any kind of measurement of satisfaction of their franchisees, it always boggles my mind what comes out. You know, that they'll buy into the idea that you have to measure your customer, your end customer satisfaction. And sometimes they buy into the next level of it's important to measure employee satisfaction. But for some reason, there's a mind block on that relationship with the franchisees. And they say, we know what they think, which is amazing, because if you think of every marriage or relationship that you've been in, you probably could say that you know what the other person thinks, but I'm sure you've caught yourself in several conversations and thought, wow, that's really not the takeaway I just got from the conversation we had. So it's always good to check your gut on the customer end, employee end, and franchisee end. And the opposite side of that, too, is just in that first contact you have with candidates when you're talking to them is about that relationship that you're building. I had Paul Pickett from Wild Birds. We were at the Franchise Update Leadership and Development Conference, and he said to me, a candidate told him specifically, when I was shopping, I chose Wild Birds because of the interactions I've had with the people on your team. So it was the driving decision by this candidate made which franchise to buy, based completely not on the business model, but on that relationship that they built from the very beginning.
Could there be a more enthusiastic person in franchising than the great Paul Pickett?
No, and he's very wise. He's very humble in his wisdom, but yes.
He's, to me, you know, he's the, I would build a franchise organization around Paul Pickett. He's that well-versed, wisdom behind his years, enthusiastic, knowledgeable about his brand, knowledgeable about his industry segment, and just an absolute great, wonderful guy. And not to get off course here, but, you know, what I really love, you know, through the whole ALS ice bucket challenge, you know, Paul did one with ice water on himself and then did one for his pet duck with warm water. I mean,
yeah.
It's just fantastic. And great shout out to Paul. I know a loyal listener of Franchise Today. Matter of fact, Paul, if you're listening or when you hear this, get in touch with me. We need to get you on the show for a certain. You know, I know that, you know, Franchise Business Review does surveys of franchisees for different systems. And yet, not a lot. I know, you know, we've dealt with this ourselves when we tried to bring some, you know, foundry clients to the table where, you know, they just have this big fear factor. And what I like to tell them, I said, you know what fear means? You know, because I love acronyms. It's forever evading actual results. And why is it? How do you get past this fear factor, this, you know, as they say, going down the river denial of just sticking their head in the sand? And like I always say, when they stick their head in the sand, their most important vulnerable asset is sticking up out of the ground while their head is on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot behind it. The idea of, you know, if I ask people how they feel and they're not happy, I have to do something about it. It's now on paper and I'm accountable to make a change. So I do think that fear holds people back from doing this. And whether it's internal or working with an outside company, you have to do it, because if you don't give your franchisees an opportunity to formalize their opinion of you, you can't move past it. They're going to always keep bringing up issues or things you didn't do right from 5, 10, 15 years ago, other management teams that you can't go back and fix. So by getting it out there with them and then working with them to say, I hear what you're saying, now how are we going to move forward? It's kind of that just relief off your shoulders. I know that whenever I feel like I've wronged someone, I have that like feeling in my gut that something's just not right. And it's just a relief to kind of have it out there. And then how can we fix this relationship? It's not a matter of, and I think a lot of franchisors are concerned that the franchisees tell me that they want me to do my local marketing different, and I'm not going to. So we're just going to keep butting heads in. They don't want to pay as much in the fee. I'm not going to help them in the way they want. And that's it. So it's always going to be this contentious issue with us. But it really could be about, I hear what you're saying. This is not the expectation that was set when you came into our system, or this is not going to change in the amount you get from us. So how can we get you the support you need using an outside vendor, doing this on your own? How can you get what you need to make your business better if it's not within the parameters of what we're promising you in our franchise agreement? So just kind of, and it's not the same. So every franchisee has a different experience.
Sure.
And so if you can use that as a way to just build your relationship with them, you're going to start seeing more engagement from those franchisees, which ultimately leads to more money for them and to the franchisor. If everyone's feeling good, and this goes across everybody, if you're in sales, if you feel good about what you're selling, you will do better at your job. You will make more money. And that's,
oh,
I mean, that's
no
what
doubt.
You're looking at. So
yeah, no doubt. So After you do a survey of franchisees and you present it to the franchisor and they face their biggest fears head on, if you have the opportunity to do a subsequent one, let's say a year later, are you typically pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised by that year's results?
That's a great question. I think it depends on what you do post-survey. I think that there's a lot of companies that probably do surveys internally or even the frequent polling that's become more popular. They do that, they collect the data, and it goes in their drawer. So they don't react to it. They don't close that feedback loop with their franchisees or their customers, whatever, whoever you're reaching out to. I think that every piece of data you get has an opportunity to help you reset expectations or react to it or build that relationship in a way to just say, I hear you and here's what's going to come next. So I think if all of that communication is done, instead of, you know, I think that anybody who is open to receiving feedback from people in their life, sometimes you get feedback that hurts your feelings. You feel like you've tried hard, you've done well, but it doesn't translate to what their perception is. So if you can take it not as an insult and kind of fire back at them to say, I can't believe you think our training and support is lacking, I think if people react in that way and kind of that I've been personally attacked way, you're going to see results falter the next year, whether you made improvements or not, because it's the way that you deliver the message or the way that you react to the data versus what's actually happening in the system. So yeah. I think, you know, any data point, if you react to it, you have a great chance in seeing improvement in the next 12 months. I've had lots of customers that have moved the needle year over year, and you see that. And I have other franchisors that I know they have a management team that is focused on delivering a positive experience for their franchisees. And they will be so excited, and they've only moved the needle a little bit. So, you know, it becomes a little bit each year until they get to that place where they feel good about it. And then the strong management teams I work with, even when they have this awesome data, they want to know where there's always still room for improvement. So where is it? Where can I still make strides in getting higher satisfaction next year? I want to be number one when anybody is out there looking at a franchise. I want to be number one in my category, because there is that competitive nature that if you love your brand and you love what you're delivering, you want people to see that.
So let's talk about actuality. When you know, Michelle Rowan does this second review, okay, a year later, are you typically pleasantly surprised or unpleasantly surprised by the results?
My hope is that people will always find a piece of news that they didn't necessarily know. So I'm usually pleasantly surprised, and I feel like even when I review with clients, they see something where they're a little hurt that it didn't move as much as possible. I love going into the individual write-in feedback from the franchisees to find comments that kind of support that they're headed in the right direction, that it's more behind that relationship versus the actual technology piece that they rolled out or the new POS. So sure. I'm usually pleasantly surprised, but, you know, there's always, when you see you know, a team's been working hard, you've talked to the team and you haven't seen the needle move, that it does, you know, it's hard to deliver that news and talk about more about resetting expectations versus actual changes to the products and services you're offering.
And I'm sure you're like me. You just want to scream because you're frustrated, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we hear a lot in franchising today about, you know, relationships. And, of course, we know that, you know, franchising is built upon relationships, but really is coming to the forefront and is in the public eye right now with all the relationship, you know, legislation that's out there for a variety of reasons. But, you know, if there were no issues, meaning if the relationships were perfect, you know, obviously the different state lawmakers wouldn't be looking at, you know, potential legislation. So with that in mind, you know, franchisors really need to really focus now more than ever on structuring and maintaining and developing that relationship with their franchisees. They need to be more diligent than they've ever been before. And of course, that leads to the word culture, you know, and it's no longer a buzzword. It's becoming more and more prevalent in the franchise community. I think it's very difficult to look at any blogs and certainly within France Social where you don't see the word culture come up a lot. In your mind, you know, what is the right culture? What's the right fit culture for a franchise organization?
I think, you know, I have no issue with talking about the culture and that becoming kind of the buzzword of what people are focused on. But I get concerned that people are just throwing up, you know, up on their wall those core values they have and leaving it at that versus I think that it's imperative that franchisors have a culture of accountability. And that's not just to your franchisees, but that's to each other. And I feel like the biggest disconnect I see is that development sometimes goes out there and does whatever they need to get a deal done. And I'm not talking about whether it's the right or the wrong franchisee. That's a completely different conversation. But let's assume they're bringing in the right franchisee that fits into the culture of this brand. But they're not setting an expectation of what the operations team is going to be delivering. So I think that seeing the systems that are out there that are tying that accountability of the development team to the operations team by saying, hey, here's a piece of your commission you get for bringing in this franchisee, but more importantly, you're going to get a higher piece of it once that franchisee is established and successful and chugging along in 6 months, 12 months, whatever it is. So that ties the development team to saying, I need to make sure that this person is happy and stays with our brand. I need to make sure that I'm not overselling what my operations team is going to deliver. And it's the same thing with the operations team. They should be involved in that development piece in some way. They should be at your discovery days or somehow connected to that candidate before they come in and be accountable to that development team to be clear in what that they're going to be delivering, how many times they're going to be in the field to visit the franchisees. So I think that, you know, there's great brands in franchising. There's a ton of them. And there's, you know, I think a lot of the brand leaders could write books on the culture they have. And I know there's a lot out there. But there seems to be that accountability piece that matches up with all the ones that I've read and a way to measure that accountability between the teams and what you're delivering to your franchisees. So I think that's the biggest piece that I hold for myself. I hold myself accountable to the people that work for me and with me, and I definitely hold myself accountable to my clients in that I never set an expectation that I can't meet. And if something happens, if a mistake or an accident or something happens to hurt that relationship, I'm the first to admit that I've done something wrong and let's fix it. So I think that that's the part, the action, not just talking about the culture, but really delivering on what those words mean to your brand.
You know, I love what you said. I mean, culture of accountability, because it really does come down to accountability. As many of our followers see this morning on Facebook, I put up a post there today about my new Fitbit Flex bracelet or band on my arm that, you know, measures my steps and everything else. And I called it, you know, my accountability piece. Because it definitely will hold me accountable, and quite frankly, you know, I was fearful of doing that, and a lot of people are fearful of accountability, but it's absolutely important. I mean, we're grown-ups. We have to make sure that, you know, we can constructively look at things and make sure that we're doing the right thing. You know,
we can have a whole other conversation about the Fitbit, Paul. I've been using mine for over almost 2 years now, but I am a huge fan. And it's also too, I mean, think about all the people that we meet in franchising and all these events, how competitive everyone is. So you can make accountability competitive and fun. You can make it be about delivering the best experience or, you know, I know that the Dwyer Group does where you kind of call out someone that's done something great and you can make it fun and exciting and not this kind of weight on your shoulders of being accountable, but really more turning it around and that group visibility of what everybody's accountable for and just celebrating when people exceed it.
But, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, a couple of things to that point, you know, because we've had various people, you know, Mark Liston, Dina Dwyer-Owens, Mary Kennedy Thompson, all been on Franchise Today, and we've talked a lot about culture. So we've heard a lot about that. You know, with respect to Fitbit, now I understand why you looked so great to me at the Franchise Leadership and Development Conference. And when I had said to you, I said, wow, you know, you look like you lost a lot of weight. And you said, no, I really haven't. But, you know, obviously, you know, keeping that Fitbit on and being conscious of it, you know, certainly has improved your fitness and lifestyle. Certainly I would say that based upon, you know, what I saw.
That's nice of you to say. No, it definitely does. I think everything kind of ties to that. It's all about your lifestyle in work and outside of work, of that whole accountability piece and liking what you're doing and the people you're around. And so if you have that in your teams, I think that comes across to everybody that you're serving.
So what I'd like to tell our listeners is when you get a chance, go on YouTube and type in, you know, Steve Wynn storytelling. And I watched a video this morning about Steve Wynn. It's a short 10-minute video, but it's well worth it because it talks about, you know, experiences. And one of the stories he relates, and he said it was really a turning point for him as they implemented this storytelling into the culture at his hotels. And, of course, we know his hotels are magnificent. And he talks about, you know, the marble and the woven carpets and, you know, just the opulence in there. He said, you know, none of that means anything without the experience. And he tells a story about a bellman that helped, you know, two customers, you know, get out of a car, elderly couple, and the one woman turns to the husband and says, oh, my God, I left our medications at home. And the bellman, you know, stepped right up and said, where is home? And the woman mentioned that it was in Southern California. And he mentioned that he has a brother in Southern California and asked a question. He said, does anybody have access to the house to the medication? Because we'll send somebody to pick up. I'll send my brother to pick up the medication. And the woman called and the housekeeper answered. And so his brother, the bellman's brother, went there and got the medication an hour later. The bellman had asked, when do you need the medication? And it was 3:00 in the afternoon. She said, we need it by 7:00 tomorrow morning. He said, well, you go have dinner, go do what you need to do. You'll have it by 7 a.m. And he hopped in a car and he drove 4 hours back to Southern California, met his brother, picked up the medication, and brought it back to the hotel and got there by 4 a.m., and the couple had their medication. And Steve Wynn goes on to say, you know, he hears, you know, there's a round of applause and stuff, but he said that's not, you know, the issue. That's a great experience, obviously, for our customers. But internally, what we did was we immediately put it on our own internal internet for all of our employees to see. And we immediately go to press with posters, with the bellman's picture and quotes from his story. And it's in all our hotels. It's in our newsletters. It's on the walls in our employee, you know, dressing rooms and the cafeteria and what have you, because we want to create that type of culture. And everybody's always looking for experience to be able to share similar experience and similar storytelling. Because it makes everybody feel good, but it basically takes the organization to a new level. You know, so, you know, question that I ask franchisors often, when was the last time you went out of your way to find out what your franchisees are doing good and promoting it to the rest of the franchise base, as opposed to only concentrating on the ones, and we know the importance of doing so, of working with the ones that are not complying, because it's absolutely important that we maintain the integrity of the trademark and the business and the brand as a franchisor. But why not look at it from a position of being positive, a lot like what the Dwyer Group does, calling out people that are doing things over and above, and talk about a great way of creating a positive culture. We are live on Franchise Today. My guest is Michelle Rowan, the president of Franchise Business Review, and we're talking about satisfaction and validation and the key to components to franchise success. And I know we could talk all day about, you know, culture and relationships and how important it is to franchise success. And, you know, there's so many newbies coming into franchising every day. We refer to them as emerging franchises, and I know you recently, Franchise Business Review recently came out with a report, and it's emerging franchises, a look at top up-and-coming, you know, brands in franchising. And, you know, I'd like to get some of your thoughts on it and what emerging brands are facing, you know, in this world where there's more and more focus on relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did just do our first ever look at emerging franchises. So we took the criteria of they've started in the last 5 years, and that's kind of what we looked at. I just keep thinking about, it was, I think, at the Springboard event, Lane Fisher, which is an event that's in Philadelphia for emerging brands. But I remember him standing up and saying, if you don't have a profitable model, stop spending money on development. You've got to just close the ranks and focus on those metrics and make sure you have a solid business before you decide to jump into the world of franchising. So I know the IFA has stats on how many brands come out every year, and some of them are coming out into very saturated segments of franchising like food, QSR. I mean, there's a million brands in there. And then, you know, there's these new sectors like the paint and sip sector, and that's a new kind of activity that people are doing, and there's probably four or five franchise brands I can think of right off the bat that are there. So I think the same good or best practices go towards small and large franchise systems on how you should grow or how you should do it. But I think what we saw when we did the editorial piece of the emerging and talking to the CEOs of those brands are, you know, what do they do that sets them apart from their competition or those big guys that are in their area? And the CEOs of the top systems were saying that they are always focused on the business side of their model on the expenses. So how can they're always looking at what are the expenses for their franchisees, how can they lower them? How do they improve unit profitability? Because that's how you make sure that you have a solid system that continues growing. And that goes beyond, you know, making sure it's scalable. But one person that we talked to, Nancy from Bottle and Bottega, was talking about how they brought in a real estate expert on staff that was just focused on finding the right leases at the right price, because that was the biggest expense for their new franchisees, and the most important thing for their franchisees was to get up and running as quickly as possible. So, I mean, that's something you could outsource or bring on staff, but that's one of the things that she's focused on, that expense side for her franchisees.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I think that the smaller brands that are doing it well, they're selling based on the experience of the individuals on their corporate team. So they're talking about where they were before or what kind of success they've had. And you have to be able to kind of show how a lean and mean corporate staff gets things done, because you don't have the budget that the big boys have or the well-established brands have. So what are you doing with the resources that you have? And really, you have to build a solid business and have a solid reputation so that you're still here in 10 years when other people start faltering and disappearing.
Absolutely. And I know in your report, Charles Willis, the president at Pinos Palette, was, mentioned in the report, and I happen to sit, and it's interesting that you mention, you know, real estate and site selection, because I sat on a panel with Charles here in Houston of the Houston Franchise Association meeting. It was their first ever meeting, and we were on a panel about, you know, site selection and real estate, and he really emphasized, you know, that point, you know, making sure that, you know, it is the right location, making sure that, you know, the lease terms are favorable, where a franchisee is going to be able to, you know, have solid unit economics. It's really, really important. And, you know, it really doesn't matter how big the organization is, with all the resources that are out there, That's one area where, you know, an emerging brand or a mature brand alike, you know, really is close to being on equal playing field, a level playing field, so to speak, just because of the, you know, cost-effective resources that are out there, you know, with third-party, you know, brokers and what have you. So it's really, really interesting, and you're right, that sip and paint industry segment is booming. And, yeah, you're right, I could think of about five different brands, too. And then segment wasn't even here 3 or 4 years ago. And what I find interesting about that segment is that it came out basically on the heels of an economic downturn, really started during the economic downturn where people were not, you know, spending a lot of extra money on, you know, luxury type of activities. And here this industry segment popped out, and the ones that are doing well are succeeding. I know Pinot's Palette is closing in on their 100th, you know, franchise location with a lot of multi-unit operators, which to me is one of the number one factors of knowing that you have a successful brand when you have people willing not only to make an investment in, but make an investment a second or a third time in the brand. I think that is a key indicator of culture within an organization. So, great report. I know I'm going to share it after reading through it, you know, with some of our emerging brands that we're working with. And, of course, they haven't been in business 3 to 5 years. They're just now getting started in franchising.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, I think that's kind of the best time to also start thinking about it.
Oh, sure.
You know, what we see in our data, it's normal for your franchisees that have been with you a year or so to just be loving you and raving about you because they are leaning on you so heavily for that support. And with emerging brands, you have the opportunity to be very responsive to your franchisees, to really handhold them as they're growing, because you don't have a lot of franchisees. But I think it's important up front to tell them, you know, as we grow, you're not going to get response as quickly as you're used to, and kind of prep them for that year 2 through 5 when you start growing more and there's more people to support and you're still running lean and mean. So I think it's the one piece of advice I would give to emerging brands is be very clear about what your plan is to scale as you grow. And as you grow, making sure that you have a good contact list for all your franchisees of this is who you call for this issue and this is the expected time that you should hear back from us. Because if you can outline that up front, they won't keep going to the CEO because they know the CEO, because that's a hard transition for founders, I think, and CEOs to make, is that I am the support staff for the first 5 franchisees, and then I have other people to do that. But how do I push my franchisees in a polite way to the right person to get them help?
Yeah, it's interesting. Back in, I think it was April, in the IFA's Franchise Development Seminar in Denver, Jason Zickerman, the president and CEO of the Alternative Board, was facilitating that at that conference. And he did a great presentation for emerging brands on the different levels of franchise organizations, like 0 to 10 units, 10 to 25 units, 25 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 and up. And how the organization changes through that growth. And just like what you said, you know, the new franchisees, the first franchisees that come on board as the organization starts to grow, they're not going to have that direct a pipeline to the CEO. They might not get as frequent communications as they did at the beginning, but certainly that doesn't mean that the care isn't there. It's just the organization is growing, and it's no different than a family growing. The attention that you pay to your first kid, and the next thing you know, you have 3 or 4 kids, and you have to kind of divide it up and pay more attention to the younger ones because they definitely need your guidance and assistance. You know, one thing that was interesting in this report, it said, in general, the areas where we tend to see lower satisfaction are marketing, communication, and financial performance. Can you elaborate a little bit about what you saw?
Yeah, well, the communication and the marketing are very commonly lower sections across franchising, so that's not unique to emerging. The financial performance, I think, will have a lot to do with expectations that were set going in. It's hard when you're a newer franchise brand or you have less franchisees to have a solid item 19, a solid item 7, really good FDD information that will help set those expectations. And as a franchisor, you can't really get into financial promises. So I think being really clear, if you have company financials that are reported in your FDD and you can share those, but making sure that franchisees connect with other franchisees and understand what does it really take time-wise to get out of the red, or what kind of money do I really need to have set aside to make sure that I can make it through the startup. And that's the saddest franchisee story, is when they just don't have enough money set aside to help support them as they ramp up their business. So I think that has a lot to do with financial performance. It's not necessarily what we look at is we look at the current, we ask, currently, how are you doing? Are you exceeding or under or at expectation? But also, what's the long-term growth potential you see for your business? So hopefully that's still positive for the emerging brands, but I think the most information you can give to a franchisee to make sure their eyes are very wide open on that financial piece is crucial. Because once you are wrong about that, it kind of sets a level of distrust or angst in that relationship. Like, why am I going to buy into anything you say when this is so far off for me?
Sure. I'd like to read a paragraph out of here. This report seems to focus or be directed to the franchise candidate. And
Yes. The
paragraph says, satisfaction with financial performance has a lot to do with having realistic expectations. Be sure you understand the profitability model of your business. Take a close look at the item 19, if available, and be sure it tells the true story. And this is the part that I really love. Ask current franchisees what the ramp-up is like, how long it took them to earn a salary, how they rate their franchisor's financial opportunity, and whether your financial expectations are realistic. I mean, that to me is a very powerful paragraph of advice.
Yeah, and I think that it doesn't stop once they buy in. You know, if you have metrics where you can measure for a franchisee, if they're on track to do what their expectations are, and that means that you have a franchisee that has a P&L and understands a business plan, which a lot of franchisees don't necessarily come in knowing. Hopefully they've prepared something as they're researching your business. But if you can give them targets and say, you know what, you're off, so what are we going to do to get you back on track? Or, just making sure that if you have these smaller milestones that they can hit, they feel good knowing that they're on track, or they see very early on that they're off track and that they need to engage with the franchisor, with other franchisees, to figure out what pieces they're missing to get to where they want to be.
Yeah, and this is a great report, Emerging Franchises, a look at the top and up-and-coming brands in franchising. There's various sections to it. I thought it was a great report, very, very well done.
Thank you. And the other, I know that it's probably been read by a lot of the listeners today, but Shelley Sun's Grow Smart, Risk Less book, I think, outlines very well the support staff ratio to growth for the steps that Brightstar went through, which grew very quickly. So I think that if anybody is kind of wondering, you know, how do I plan with a lean and mean staff to grow, I think she has a good layout of what positions were added and at what point, what size the system was. And it's really an easy book to follow.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is one of the that might be the Bible for emerging brands. I know I've shared, matter of fact, I'm out of copies. I think I had about 6 copies. I think I'm down to 1 now, because I encourage a lot of new brands to read that, and I share quite a bit. You know, in some of the notes that you and I exchanged, you know, prior to the show, talking about, you know, what we were going to talk about on the show, you said, we discussed brands spending money on development and trade shows that have op issues and aren't validating well. How that is money not well spent, just throwing it out the window, if you spend the time and effort to engage them, and validation kills the deal. So So would you care to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, it kind of goes back to the point of, if you don't have a solid system, why are you growing it? So instead of looking at it from the financial side, for the people that do a survey with their franchisees or don't, and they choose not to because they know it's not good, there's not any reason that you should be trying to develop your brand and sell more, because, number one, the internet. Any franchisee that is really that upset with you can kind of put it out there and really ruin your reputation. But besides somebody, you know, if it's a smart franchisee, they understand that when they're out there bashing your brand online, it's hurting their investment. So hopefully they are working with you to work on that relationship and fix whatever's wrong. But it doesn't help in the fact that when a franchisee is looking, or a candidate is looking to become a franchisee, they're talking to your current franchisees. So if you spend money to get 10 deals that make it to validation, that point where you hand them the FDD and you say, call them, talk to them, and they call, whether you're a big system or a small system, and they keep hearing the same things, the same issues, you're killing that deal. So it always boggles my mind when people say, you know, we know what the issues are. We're not going to work on this. We're spending all of our money on growth this year. And, you know, I don't call anybody out on their business. All the work we do is confidential. So as people know us from the awards, we do work with franchise systems that know that they don't have strong satisfaction within their industry or within their franchisee, within their system. But they want to address it. They want to fix that relationship or build a better culture within the brand. So when I talk to people and they either think their results are going to be awesome and they come back that they're not, you know, my first response is, aren't you glad that you asked them and that they're telling you instead of telling Joe Smith when he calls to see how you're doing? And second of all, you know, don't you think that they feel better now that they've been heard and you can start addressing these things?
Sure.
But it also helps. A lot of people will say, I have these two franchisees or these 10 franchisees that are just not happy, and anything I do cannot make them happy. It's not me. All my other franchisees are happy. It's really these people. I think that compiling the data in a way to look at satisfaction across the board helps you kind of highlight those people that are negative, and it allows you to share that story with a candidate to say, you know, we have people that this doesn't work for, and if you call them and they are saying they're unhappy in this, I want you to ask these questions. So you kind of prep them with questions to identify what the real issues are. So it's having people that aren't happy in your system, hopefully you have the opportunity to coach them up or out of your brand. But if you don't, you know, and it really is a small minority of your group, collect data in some kind of system way that you can share it with a candidate to show them that these people are in the minority, to show them that you are aware of their unhappiness, and even outline the things that you're doing with them to help them fix the issue with you or what their business is. So, and use it kind of as a telling story so that when I'm talking to a candidate and you say, you know, when you start not hitting your financial metrics that we have set for you, you know, we're going to come back and talk about this. And if you're frustrated with us that we're trying to help you, you know, we're going to remind you of this conversation now that there's going to be ebbs and flows in our relationship like every other relationship, but we need to figure out a way to move forward so that your business is on track and our business is on track. So, you know, just kind of really focusing on those existing franchisees before you start spending money when you know that there's issues. It's not money well spent.
Sure. Very good points. I know the thing that really bothers me is when you're working or talking with a franchisor and there's a lot of finger pointing. And they say, well, the franchisee wouldn't do this, you know, and they never listen and this, that, and the other thing. And what made me laugh about it across my Google screen today was a funny quote of the day by a Thomas Szasz. I'm not familiar, but he says, two wrongs don't make a right, but they make a good excuse. And I thought, wow, that's very timely to be right there on my screen. We are live on Franchise Today. My guest is Michelle Rowan, the president of Franchise Business Review, and we're heading down the stretch to the end of another episode segment of Franchise Today. And of course, yesterday, as we know, was Veterans Day. And I know that your vet report just came out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, we have our veterans report we do every year, and what I like about our report is that it's based on the feedback we get from existing franchisees within these brands. So it's not just taking a look at people that offer an incentive to veterans to get in. So what we take a look at is we take all the data that's in our system that we've collected in the last year, and we highlight, we ask a question, are you a veteran? And we look at just that data. So we highlight 101 companies this year that had strong feedback from those veterans. We also have a study that came out in conjunction with the IFA where they're tracking the number of veterans that are franchisees but also employed within franchise systems. So that came out as well, and I've seen that coming up in a lot of posts that are out there. But just kind of trying to track that commitment that the IFA made to help engage more veterans in all pieces of business related to franchising. So, I think it's a great report. I think it's a wonderful thing that franchise brands offer the discount on a fee to come in, which I know VetFran, that's what they support. So if you're a member of VetFran, you're offering some kind of discount to franchisees that have military service. And it's a great first step. I think that what comes out in the editorial of this year's Veterans Report is what those brands are that are in the report are doing beyond just that initial discount. There's a couple of examples I know that are in there. I'll see which ones I can remember. But, you know, if you're talking to people that are still active in the service and they've started exploring about what's going to happen when they come home, anything that you can do to make it easier for them to find out and connect with you is going to help them make their decision, and it's going to help present your brand well. So just keeping that in mind that they might not be able to easily get to all of your materials that you have for them. So what can you do online with them? Can you have a webinar or some kind of Skype solution to allow you to talk through what you want to tell them about your brand? What kind of information can you give them for somebody that can't visit your stores in person? So I know that Office Pride does a really great job. They have both printed and online materials that they've designed specifically for veterans, and they attend military exhibitions, and they go to bases to talk to people that are just coming out of the service. And I'm also thinking of just that flexibility piece with them. I know that Christian Brothers, I'm trying to think of another one, National Property Inspection, they do special discovery days that are outside their normal schedule to meet the schedules of their veterans that are researching the brand. So I think that, you know, just being flexible with them and helping them do their due diligence from far away is really helpful.
Yeah, very, very helpful. And in the report, it states, franchisors tell us there are typically two types of military candidates: those who complete their service commitment and move on to civilian jobs, and those who have long military careers and reach leadership positions. Depending on the franchise, one type may be a better fit than other. You know, and also, you know, to that point too, it doesn't necessarily mean they're ready for, you know, business ownership as well. And I know the Dwyer Group has, and others, have worked real hard to bring military personnel transitioning out of the service into jobs within their organization. And I believe it was Mary Kennedy Thompson that mentioned to me a few weeks back that, you know, they're starting to see some of those matriculate, so to speak, from having a job to actually, you know, purchasing the franchise. So that's another great opportunity for franchises is at the employment level for the franchisees.
Oh, absolutely. And, the, you know, the other piece you're talking about, the two types of veterans, you know, younger veterans that have had shorter military careers that come out, they're typically investing in the low investment franchises that are out there because they don't have that kind of reserve of money built up to go after some of the bigger investments. So the other piece, too, that you can do for your veterans is offering any kind of internal financing. So, you know, it's great that you discount the fee, but I know Heaven's Best, they have half of their fee is paid up front, and then they'll help finance internally the rest of it over 5 years. So, again, you're helping those people that might not have access to the cash still get into the system. So there's definitely lots of ways you can help make it a better transition for the veterans to get into your brand if it is a good fit for them.
So it's interesting that when I was reading down the report, And when we were just talking about emerging brands, and you had said, you know, marketing communications seems to be, you know, a common point of, you know, dissatisfaction. But in this report, it says where satisfaction runs highest, and this is amongst veteran franchisees, is the marketing and promotional programs, as well as, of course, effective use of technology and training and support programs. But it's interesting, and I think we get into the whole psychology of it, because people coming out of the military, I mean, obviously are more regimented and understand systems and processes a little bit better and probably don't question as much as somebody that might come out of the private sector. I think that might be the key right there of why the veteran franchisees tend to think that they're satisfied with marketing, and yet the non-veteran franchisees, you know, seem to think that marketing is an issue.
Right, because they actually follow the plan.
Right. Veterans probably say, it is what it is. I got to follow it. There's no use, you know, bitching about it. We might as well just do it. Where I know working with a lot of franchisees, you know, everybody's an expert.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if you read through the report, we do talk to veteran franchisees. And, you know, their advice to people that are looking to buy is, you don't need specific experience in whatever business you're going into to buy that business. And we say that to anybody that's outside, that's not a veteran too. That goes to any candidate. But what they said is you need to first look at the business model and the structure of the corporate team and then the service offering. So basically you're looking at it as, can I execute this plan? And for veterans, I think a lot of that is going to be, I'm going to follow this roadmap that the franchisor is giving me, and I'm going to expect stellar results because that's what they told me. If I work this plan, I'm going to see these types of results. That very, they can just visualize it. You know, if I execute on this plan, I will get to my end result. So that is probably why I think also too, they don't come out of the service thinking that they have any kind of awesome skill in marketing. So they are open to the help and that plan that's provided by the franchisor, whereas everyone else that's in life and loves a product and throws it up on their Facebook page believes that they know how to market.
We may have just uncovered the holy grail. I think that's great, especially as we spend so much time on the marketing side. You know,
yes.
Michelle, this was a great time. We're closing in at the top of the hour. I told you it would blow by ridiculously fast, and I know we can easily talk another hour or so. And to that end, I would love to invite you on a future segment of Franchise Today. Maybe we can even bring Eric along with you, and it'd be great to have a little panel discussion with the both of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm glad I was able to do it. And I always love just kind of chatting with you on stuff that we both see at events or in our industry. It's a great industry to be in, that's for sure.
It is. Well, thank you for being my guest today on Franchise Today.
Thank you for having me.
Next week, our guest, as I said, is Nancy Friedman. She's known as the telephone doctor, and she'll be talking a lot about customer satisfaction and also, you know, how to more effectively use that tool that we take for granted, the telephone. And it's interesting because as I talk about social media and social technology a lot, and a lot of people, you know, don't grasp onto it, saying it's an interruption, just think of that telephone and what it was like as an interruption to the mom-and-pop business owner who had a phone put in and dealing with the customer across the counter, and that phone rang. You know, probably a lot like what people think today about social media being a disruption. But it's a tool, and I'm really anxious to ask Nancy about her opinion about social media, especially as we'll be talking about customer satisfaction and the telephone. And then, of course, we'll be heading into the Thanksgiving holiday, so we'll be on break the day before Thanksgiving. So next week, again, Nancy Friedman, my guest on Franchise Today. Of course, I want to thank again our great strategic partner in the Franchise Update Media Group. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.